Meitä OP-ryhmän asiakkaita on 3,5 miljoonaa. Otetaan yhdessä tulevaisuus omiin käsiimme ja rakennetaan siitä parempi. Meillä on jotain yhteistä. OP-ryhmä.
Osuuspankit, OP-yrityspankki, OP-koti ja Pohjola-vakuutus ovat osa OP-ryhmää.
Mark Barber, first of all, welcome to Finland.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be back. Always enjoy myself in Helsinki.
That's good to hear because, well, I think the most important question I would have had for you is how do you like Finland? Because that's something we always want to know.
I love it. I've been here several times and I just find the city is fantastic. It's nice and calm. The people are lovely, very friendly. And it's just a very relaxing place to be, generally speaking. I love the food. I love the beer. Everything about it works very, very well for me, apart from the prices, maybe.
Well, that's good to hear. Good to hear. Mark, tell us a bit about yourself. Where do you come from? Who are you?
Who am I?
Yeah.
I ask myself that quite a lot, actually. yes, I'm Mark Barber. I'm the planning director of Radio Centre, which is the industry body for commercial radio in the UK. I've been there for about 17 years. Before that, I spent 18 years working in media agencies as a planner and a buyer. So I've got a good sort of general all-round media background.
What does a planning director do in an organization like Radio Centre, which is the equivalent of radio media here in Finland?
Yes, it is, yeah. So that's a very good question as well. The title is sort of suitably vague to allow me to do lots of things. I guess I spend most of my time getting involved in new research projects, maybe helping to shape some of the marketing activity we're doing, and generally developing other content that we use to take out and persuade advertisers. What a great medium radio is. But if you were to sort of put it succinctly, what is my job? My job is to get advertisers to love radio as much as the great British public, or in this case, the great Finnish public.
Yeah. Is that difficult?
Yes. It is difficult because I think people's attention is distracted by a lot of the new news and the gleamy new developments in the tech world that distract attention away from what works to what's new and exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's had a big detrimental effect, not just on radio, but on all traditional media and how they're perceived. And I wasn't planning to cover that in this podcast, but our recent study, Reevaluating Media, which was conducted on our behalf by Ubiquity, who are an independent media consultancy, found that there's actually a huge gap between how advertisers perceive different media and the reality of the evidence that demonstrates how they deliver for advertisers.
Yeah.
And you can imagine where radio sits on that spectrum, one of the best performers, but with some of the worst perceptions.
I think I'll ask you some question about this research because it's super interesting. I went through the material myself and I do have some question about that. Now, what's very interesting to me is that you seem to love numbers. I love numbers. I think the people listening to this podcast are those who love numbers. Radio can't be measured. This is something we hear all the time. You, as a man who loves numbers, how do you respond to that?
So is that radio can't be measured in terms of its listening or its effectiveness?
We hear both.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, I would suggest that, yes, it can be measured. And certainly in audience terms, there are different approaches to measuring radio audiences around the world. The one that we've got in the UK is a diary-based system, which works, you know, traditional paper diaries, but now also online and mobile diaries. And that's a highly effective way of measuring what radio stations people listen to, when they're listening and how long they're listening. And because it's platform neutral, it's managed to keep up with new developments in radio. So if people are listening to a radio station through their voice-activated device, it can still be captured in the diary format. So it's been really, really valuable and cut out a lot of the challenges that other media have had with measuring new platforms. In terms of advertising effectiveness, hey, look, if anyone wants to come and have a conversation with me about how can you measure the effects of radio, we've got a load of evidence. Most of it's covered in reevaluating media, but we also developed an ongoing measurement tool, campaign measurement tool called Radio Gauge, which was designed to give individual advertisers data about how radio is performing specifically for them within their wider media campaign. We kicked that off in 2008, and over the last 10 years, we've measured more than 700 campaigns. And all of that data has been aggregated up, so we don't reveal any confidentialities of individual advertisers, but the aggregated data is available on our website, and so people can go in there and look at the effects aggregated across a wide range of campaigns. And let me tell you, radio delivers. If you use it properly, you use it well, radio really, really works very effectively for advertisers.
Now, as you have measured so many campaigns, you've seen a lot. You've seen what works and what doesn't work. What has been the number one best case presenting the power of audio radio that you have ever seen?
Well, there's quite a few, and they're for different reasons. But I think I'll go for a couple, actually, if I may.
So
one is Autoglass. I don't know if it's called Autoglass in Finland. It's a windscreen repair and replacement company.
Yeah.
They had been around in the UK for many years. They had done TV advertising. They had sponsored Chelsea Football Club shirts. They tried lots of different things, but they really didn't have much brand awareness amongst anybody, apart from maybe the insurance companies who used them. And then it turned out that one of the insurance companies, the biggest insurance company, had decided that they were going to create their own windscreen repair organization and weren't going to use Autoglass anymore. So Autoglass suddenly had to make sure that they communicated very effectively with the public to get direct business. They decided to use radio because, you know, number one, use radio. People are looking at the problem that you're telling them about when they're in their car. And number two, they thought it'd be an effective way of sort of not only driving business today, but building brand in the longer term. And to do that, they used the jingle, Autoglass Repair, Autoglass Replace. Don't worry, I'm not going to sing it.
Thank you.
and actually, the reason I like this case study is because it proved how effectively radio can do both of those things. And, you know, the Autoglass brand awareness, brand consideration grew massively. And their business continued to grow. And the more radio they used, the more business they were getting in. To the extent that they started to use radio to turn up the dial on the business in areas where maybe they weren't getting enough phone calls. Other times, maybe they had to turn it down a little bit if they were getting too many phone calls in another region. But the other reason I like it is because before they started advertising on radio, there wasn't anything called the windscreen repair category in people's heads. It just didn't exist. Nobody even thought about windscreen repair. After Autoglass hit the airwaves, you know, probably one of the things that people most remembered about radio advertising was windscreen repair and Autoglass. Yeah. And they loved it. They used their staff for the voiceovers, and one of the guys, I can't remember his name, a guy from Birmingham, so he had a good Brummie accent. Gavin, that was his name. One of the commercial radio stations ran a competition for the best voiceover talent in advertising. And Gavin from Autoglass, not a professional actor in any way, shape or form, came second.
Wow.
He was a very popular guy.
That's not bad. So did this their campaigns also rise awareness of the whole industry?
It created that industry. It didn't really exist before. I think, you know, people knew stuff happened, but the idea of going direct to a company and getting your windscreen repaired for free didn't exist. And so suddenly that was a big thing, and people started making a lot of use of it. And it was a highly effective strategy for Autoglass, and they ran it for many years. The other one I was going to talk about, sorry, I spent a long time talking about Autoglass.
No problem, we have time.
The other one is Heinz. So Heinz is a...
Ketchups,
soups,
yeah,
salad cream, or you may call it mayonnaise. And they've been around for a long, long time, obviously. They've done bits and pieces of advertising very heavily TV-based in the past, or maybe print-based, very visual.
Yeah.
But they created a new campaign around the theme of it has to be Heinz. So it was all about targeting those moments, food moments, when you would be having some kind of food that was call out for ketchup or salad cream or hot tomato soup or whatever. And then they would say, you know, for these sort of occasions, it always has to be Heinz. They ran some TV and they developed some radio ads. And what they found through their tracking and their ROI analysis was that the radio element really, really performed strongly, to the extent that they started to adapt the radio campaign, make it much more personal. So it's celebrities speaking about individual moments. And I'll give one idea, and maybe I can get the ad to you and you can insert it here. Yep. But one guy talking about getting hot chips. So you go to the chippy and you get a packet of hot chips. It's open because you're going to eat them as you go along, and they're too hot, but it's quite cold out, and it's such a pleasurable experience walking down the road eating hot chips. And you know, for those sort of occasions, you need some ketchup, and it always has to be Heinz. And that campaign tracked brilliantly, and they really increased their spend on radio, and it was highly effective for them. But I like it because it was it was using radio to remind people about the values of a really strong and existing brand that had perhaps sort of been lost over the years.
Yeah. Mark, you've been working in the industry for, what, 30 years?
30 years, yeah, media and radio, yeah.
And radio. Why is it that you are still... I mean, I think people can hear it through your voice. You've got the sparkle in your eyes. You light up when you get to talk about these things. What keeps it so interesting for you?
Well, I think a couple of things. You know, from a very early age, I suddenly realized that I wanted to work in advertising. I think it's a really interesting, creative career. And maybe I didn't quite end up in the place where I thought I was going to end up. I always wanted to write the ads. Mm-hmm. But thankfully for everybody, I don't do that.
Would you be the one writing the best ads?
Somehow I doubt it. So I always wanted to work in advertising, and entering into the media side of things, I discovered it was really interesting, some great characters, learned a lot about media and how that influences people, and how it can convey additional effects onto the ads that are placed in there. And I think, you know, especially over the last, in the time I've been working in radio, the last 17 years, the whole industry is continually changing. So thinking about radio, the basic content that people hear hasn't changed that much. It's a mixture of talking, music, news, weather, traffic, travel. That hasn't changed drastically, but everything has changed around it. The sort of devices that people listen to it on, how they interact with it, and the wider media world surrounding radio. You know, in the time that I've been working at Radio Centre, when I joined, internet advertising took 1% of all ad spend in the UK. Last year, I think it was 50%. So that's a huge intervention, completely skewed the market into a different way. But still, radio is holding its own. So it's the fact that the industry overall keeps changing and adapting, and that brings new challenges and new opportunities, whatever role you're in, and for radio as well. I think there are challenges and opportunities coming out of that.
Yeah. Are there things in consumer behavior or shopping behavior that keep surprising you?
So behavior-wise, I think there's... shopping or whatever, I think there's a shift to shopping online, obviously. Mm. And I think that's interesting in some respects, in that you can maybe drive more quick response, short-term response. Whether it's good for the high street or society in general is a different question. So I don't know whether you heard the news this morning about Amazon being the second $1 trillion valued company after Apple.
Yeah.
Most of the money they make, I think, goes into Jeff Bezos' salary. So, but there we go. I think the interesting thing about people and media that I've noticed and seen this adapt over the years is how people use different media for different situations and different needs. And I think, you know, a few years ago, we ran a study called Audio Now, which was very much a qualitative-led study rather than quant. You know, we spoke to a lot of people. We got them to film themselves over a two-week period every time they listened to any audio. And from that, we were able to ascertain different audio need states. And within that, we were then able to understand what types of audio they were using to meet those different need states. So people have really almost subconsciously adapt and manage their media consumption to suit their needs, their mood, their situation, who they're with, what they're doing. And I think that's really, really an interesting insight into things. I think the other trend within media as well is a slow shift from linear media consumption to on demand. And I think that maybe that's slightly more prevalent in the TV world than radio at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably a function of the fact that TV has always been a very much a sit down and entertain me type thing, a very focused media moment. Whereas with radio, radio follows people around. Most people are doing something else when they're listening to radio. And so they're less, I guess, available to really manage the content they're listening to. And that's why radio really works in that environment, because it gives them everything they need with no effort. And that's, you know, and everyone understands that from older listeners through to the youngest listeners who have all got Spotify and that sort of thing. They still see that radio has something unique about it.
You already mentioned trends just now. One trend, we're shifting from a more linear to a more on-demand, more digital age. You also mentioned trends, not necessarily in a very good way. When we first started, you said we are putting our money into new trends, which aren't necessarily that effective. So what are the biggest trends concerning audio and audio consumption?
So I guess talking from a UK perspective, you know, what we're seeing is that audio listening overall is increasing.
Yeah.
So people are spending more time with audio. Within the audio sector, we're seeing some shifts between the types of audio people are listening to. And most of those shifts are within the on-demand space. So the likes of Spotify and podcasts are taking audience away from people's personal music collections. So whereas before, you know, we'd get our records out, that would be me back in the day, or my compact cassette, remember those folks? or more recently, you know, iTunes. People are now just going to Spotify, buying a subscription, and it's just everything's more available. And you can see the hours shifting there. However, radio seems to be holding its own. 3 years ago, it accounted for 76% of all time spent with audio. This year, it accounted for 75% of all time
in
spent.
The UK.
In the UK,
yeah.
So I would be very surprised if those trends were radically different, perhaps with the exception of the US, where I think the radio product and the competition is a very different environment. But I think, you know, the UK and Europe generally share quite a lot of trends in that respect.
Yeah. You've been to Finland quite a few times, and I think you know something about the Finnish radio market. How is that different from where you come from?
Well, actually, I don't think there's a lot of differences, if I'm honest. I think there's a lot of commonalities. I see this across Europe. And as I said, the US, I think, used to be the market that everyone used to look to. But these days, I think, you know, Europe looks within itself and sees parallels from market to market. We have a mixture of national and local stations. There are public service broadcasters that we're competing with, some of which are stronger than others. But I think the interesting additional parallel between Finland and the UK at the moment is that I know that, you know, in Finland, the radio market is doing really, really well. Highest ever revenue.
Yeah.
Audiences holding up very, very effectively. And that's the same thing that we've got in the UK. And I'm intrigued, while I'm here this time, to find out a little bit more about why you think that is. Can I turn the tables and ask you, why do you think Finnish radio is doing so well at the moment?
In my opinion, people still have the need for an easy choice. An easy choice that they know is a good quality one. They know when they turn the radio on, they know which channel they turn on. You always have consistent quality on those channels. All the music, everything is going through research. We know what the people want to hear. So it's basically tailored music for you. You don't have to go through all the work yourself. I mean, I love Spotify. I love all the on-demand services, all the podcast stuff. But still, my main choice is radio, not because I work in radio, but also before this, because it's easy, it's entertaining, it's for me.
Yeah, I think that's certainly our experience in the UK would suggest that's the case. So I think the other interesting thing is in terms of ad revenue. So you're doing really well. we're doing really well. But I think the challenge that we still face is that, you know, in the UK, radio accounts for something like 16% of all time that people spend with media. Yet we take just under 4% of total ad revenue.
Yes.
Okay, so we might be at record levels of ad revenue. We might be growing faster than the market, but we're still way behind our share of media time. And I suspect the same is true in Finland.
We are a 7% media at the moment.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's the challenge we face in Finland and the UK and across Europe. In fact, globally, every market is in a similar position, which is our share of ad revenue is way behind our share of overall audience.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge that we're trying to overcome.
So the research by Ubiquiti shows that radio is definitely one of the most effective medias there is. Yet we struggle to get even to 7 or 8 or even up to 10% of media share in terms of revenue. But why is that? Why are marketers spending all their money on other stuff?
Because they perceive it to be more effective. Because they've been they're constantly fed a diet of new news about new digital technology and how it can allow you to target much more effectively, narrowcast targeting. You know, the promise is great. You know, who wants wastage? Yeah, right. Now, so you sort of go, oh, yes, of course, I don't want to waste any money. I don't want wastage. I need to be really niche targeting. That's great. But there are two issues with that. Number one, the promise isn't always delivered. You know, the quality of the data isn't that great in many cases. You don't know which environment you're going into if you're buying programmatically. So the environment may not be conducive to your supporting your ad. Thirdly, we've got GDPR regulation, which is going to actually make a lot of that data redundant for ad targeting purposes. So I think the promise is great, but it's not quite been delivered in the way that it's been promised. The other thing is this whole issue about wastage. Actually, there's a lot of research, proper research by academics or research done across a huge swathe of advertising case studies that demonstrates if you want to grow your brand, actually you need to reach as many people as possible. The idea of wastage, let's forget, the term wastage is the wrong term. Yeah. It should be called incremental reach, reaching beyond your current audience of users to tell new people about your brand, to excite them about it, to engage them in your brand. So when they enter the market to buy a product in your category, they choose your brand over another. And so that long-term investment in brand building is the thing that makes the biggest difference to the profitability of a brand. And reaching everybody is a vital part of that.
So is targeted marketing wrong?
Targeted marketing isn't wrong. It's just about finding the right balance. And I think what's happened in recent years is the balance has shifted far too far towards sort of niche targeting, which, you know, it's just never going to be, well, it's never going to deliver the broad effects that big brands need to achieve if they want to grow.
Yeah.
And, you know, the simple equation is it better to speak to one person 10 times or 10 people once? What do you think is going to elicit the best effects? Well, speaking to 10 people once, because there's more chance that, you know, some of them will respond in some way.
Yeah.
So it's basic logic on many occasions. And unfortunately, that's got left behind in this headlong rush towards the big, shiny digital god. But I think, you know, we're seeing a slightly more circumspect attitude towards that now. I think people are being a lot more considerate in the UK about the value that traditional media can bring to a plan, seeing how they work alongside digital media and getting a much richer perspective on the value of different media. I think our re-evaluating media study hopefully will help further that cause. And I think it certainly helped highlight the big gap in perception and reality.
Yeah. To those who haven't seen the re-evaluating media study, it can be found online, right?
It can be found at the Radio Centre website, all freely available.
Just Google re-evaluating media. In short, what are the most overrated and underrated medias?
From re-evaluating media, the most overrated were online video and social media. And the most underrated were radio, magazines, and newspapers.
So TV, the places we put our money in, all the digital stuff, online videos, social media, it's overrated.
I think it's perceived to be stronger than the evidence suggests at the moment. Now, maybe there is a lot of evidence out there that people hold that isn't being made publicly available. So, you know, if that's the case, then great. If reevaluating media persuades digital publishers to release that data into the market, then that's a good thing. I think I'd be very happy with that. Or perhaps they need to start investing in some proper effectiveness research to help build a case for digital media. So I don't think the study is saying they're not effective. It's saying, based on the available evidence at the moment, they don't justify the levels of investment that they're currently getting.
Yeah. But still, we are throwing lots and lots of money into those medias. And one reason I hear constantly is that it's so measurable. So how can and how will audio become more measurable in time from now to, let's say, in 5 years?
Before I go into that, I'll try and dodge the question by saying, what do you mean by measurable? So how is digital media measurable?
The reasons I hear is we know how many people have seen our ad. We know how many clicks we got from those, and we know how many people have bought our product from those. So basically, it's all measurable. Okay, 10,000 people have seen our ad, 1,000 of those clicked it, and we got we sold 10 products.
Okay.
So how could you do this in audio? Is there a way?
Well, there are different ways. Actually, I'm going to challenge some of that as well.
Yes.
Because the scene thing, you know, there's a huge concern at the moment about ad fraud in the online industry, you know, bots and, to paraphrase Trump, fake views. So the scene thing is debatable at the moment, whether that's an accurate figure. Clicks are fine, you know. Although, how many times have you accidentally clicked on an ad because you couldn't find the cross to get rid of it?
Yes, most of my clicks are accidental clicks.
Yeah, so, you know, clicks are a measure of somebody interacting, but whether that's a positive interaction engagement or a negative one is not covered either. And then finally, the buying thing. Well, how many of those people who bought the product heard some radio advertising or saw a TV commercial or an ad in a magazine? And actually, that was the thing that set them off on this journey to buy that product. And I think that's the thing, you know, it's about understanding where the different points of influence lie. Just because somebody clicks on an ad and buys doesn't mean that that ad was the thing that persuaded them to buy. It was the thing that fulfilled demand rather than created the demand in the first place. So I think there's a whole discussion about that, you know, sensible thinking about the way advertising works and the role of online within that. So that's the first thing. In terms of how are we going to measure audio in that way? Well, there are different ways of measuring it, you know, and it's not going to be in the same thing because people don't click. You know, maybe you can measure clicks. If clicks is the measure, you can set up a study maybe with a test and a control sample, understand people exposed to the audio versus those that aren't, and see what the difference in clicks is. We ran a study similar to that back in 2010 called the Online Multiplier. And that demonstrated that radio has a very powerful effect in getting people to interact with brands online when they've been exposed to radio advertising. On the other hand, you know, what's the thing you're really measuring? Is it about brand awareness? Is it about brand consideration? Is it about actual sales? Is it return on investment? There are a whole raft of processes to go through that, where you can actually isolate the effects of radio or any other medium by doing that. So we can be measurable. And measurable about the things that actually advertisers probably find more helpful and more important than clicks.
Radio in Finland is still quite often a support media. We do our brand commercials on TV. We do them online. We do them in the cinemas, wherever. We build the brand there. And then we take radio into the media mix and we bombard the people with our tactical messages. how do you see radio as a brand builder versus a more tactical?
That's a good question. And, you know, I have to say that I think radio is used in the same way pretty much everywhere. You know, but primarily, people see radio as a tactical medium. And there are very good reasons for that. You know, good tactical media are very efficient. They can reach people at relevant times. You can change copy frequently and to get the latest message out and, you know, all to drive that short-term metric. So radio is brilliant at it. You know, I would never say that radio is not a great tactical medium. It is brilliant. And that's why retail is one of our biggest categories, and I'm sure the same is in Finland. Yep. And when you look at ROI data, you know, radio is the best generator of ROI for retail advertisers compared to any other medium. I've looked at two different studies. They both show the same thing. So that shows how great radio can be used for short-term tactical campaigns. And I think on the whole, advertisers are quite good at using radio in that way, generally. Retail advertisers, anyway. Yeah. From a brand building perspective, I guess we're sort of suffering a little bit from decades of image-led advertising. So it's always about the visual thing. You know, the idea of brand image, it forces you to think of a visual picture of some kind.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's been left behind maybe is brand character. And I think that's a bit that audio can really deliver and add to. And there's a lot of studies that talk about, academic studies and that, which talk about the different aspects of media that are valuable for brand building and, you know, there's reach, ability to drive high reach, ability to forge an emotional connection with the consumer, and also the ability to generate fame. Those are three important factors that you want from any medium to help build your brand. And radio can do all of those. You know, we all know how strongly radio can reach vast swathes of the population. We've got some research called the emotional multiplier. Everything's called multiplier in my world most of the time anyway, which demonstrates that, you know, people are twice as happy when they're listening to radio compared to any other medium. And then in terms of
Twice as happy compared to any other medium when you're listening to radio.
That's a good challenge, because I realized after I said it, I've slightly misled you there. People are twice as happy when they're listening to radio compared to when they're not consuming anything, any other medium.
Okay.
And that is higher than either TV or online. So
still impressive.
Yeah. Radio is still best, basically,
yeah,
at forging that emotional connection overall. Now, I'm sure there are peaks and troughs, and TV at its very best probably will beat radio at its best, but maybe not. So, there's evidence to show that radio does reach, it does emotional connection, and analysis of a big data bank of advertising effectiveness campaigns in the UK also demonstrates that campaigns that use radio drive brand fame more effectively than those that don't. So radio ticks those boxes. It's just a matter of helping advertisers understand how effective radio can be in that regard. And we're trying to build up a bank of evidence. Reevaluating media was part of that, thinking about what advertisers value in the round from brand building media. But we also ran another study in 2016 called the Brand Multiplier, again, which explored how radio can help build a brand's network of associations very effectively alongside TV advertising. Using the two together makes for a very efficient campaign mix.
If I was a marketing director, what I understand from your speech is you should use more radio. It's very effective. It's good for your business. But how to use radio? I mean, should you just go make an ad that says our business is the best one, you should buy our product? Or should you really consider how your business sounds?
Without doubt, I think I'd go for the latter. Think about your brand sound. What is your brand voice? You know, people always think of brand images. There's evidence in the UK that suggests that 86% of brands have visual brand guidelines, but only 17% have audio brand guidelines. That's a massive gap. Why is that? All the evidence I've seen demonstrates that strong audio branding can help engage people with the advertising at a deeper level, make them like it more. Also creates instant brand recognition as well. And when you've got strong audio branding, you don't just have to use that on radio. You can use it everywhere. And the other benefit of audio branding is it also works very effectively at a subconscious level. People don't have to be actively listening for the audio branding to work. You're looking at me, your listeners can't see me, but you know, I've got a few grey hairs, what hair I do have. And so I was a child in the 70s. And in the 70s in the UK, it was a great decade for jingles.
Yeah.
And that's quite a pejorative term now. I prefer to call them brand songs, but beer advertising in particular was very fond of a jingle. So I was between the ages of 6 and 16. And a lot of them were between the ages of 6 and 10. A lot of beer ads used jingles. I can still recall those jingles word for word now, even though they weren't relevant to me at that time. Shortly afterwards, they would be. But at that time, they weren't. I can still remember them. That's the power of a really piece of effective audio branding, wrapping a message and words around your, about your brand into some music and embedding that deep into people's subconscious.
So what happened between, let's say, in the last 30 or 40 years? Because once commercial radio started, it was filled with jingles. I can still remember from the 90s in my childhood that every company had a jingle. So what happened in between? Because we lost them somehow, didn't we?
We did. Well, I think from what I understand, back in those days, in the creative department of a big ad agency, you would have writers and art directors. And I think these days the skill of copywriting has been not lost altogether, but I think, you know, nowadays they still recruit creatives in pairs, but they're not necessarily looking for a specialist copywriter within that. They may share those duties. So I think the art of copywriting is at risk of being lost. And it is a very careful and important art in advertising, I think. Secondly, back in those days, a lot of creative departments would have a piano in them so that people could sit at the piano, the copywriter, and work out a tune and a jingle to place in the ad. So music was sort of like very much part of the creative process. And then I think in the 80s, it all became about lifestyle advertising. Jingles were perceived as being a bit naff. It was all about creating a, you know, luxurious image of what your life could be like if you used this brand. And somebody singing about the brand was, well, you know, that's a bit rubbish, really. we don't want that. And I think that's what's happened since then. And if you ever talk to people about jingles, their reaction is very negative. You know, yes. It's like, oh, they're really naff and rubbish. Yeah. And, oh, we wouldn't want to use that. Whereas if you change the language and call them brand songs, it suddenly transforms that into that's interesting. What is a brand song
that's
then?
Branded audio content.
Yeah.
Yeah, brand songs and sonic logos.
And so we still see, so there are some brands who use a bit of that at the moment. And sort of audio branding, there are some people who do it, some big brands that do it. And one of the most famous ones globally probably at the moment is McDonald's with their I'm Loving It. They've adapted that over the time. So they use different styles at the end of different ads to suit the content of the ad. But it's proved a very durable and efficient branding mechanism for them, which they use across all media. And it's been very flexible too.
So absolutely.
It can work. Back to the question. I would focus on getting some audio branding. Even if you don't go that far, if you're using radio for the first time, I would think, okay, I'm using radio for the first time. It may not work. But if it does, what elements of this creative execution can I use in my next creative execution to create some consistency?
Yeah.
So it could be the voice, it could be a little piece of music or something else, a construct. What can I carry forward? So that's the bit that helps you build the brand in the longer term, and you can insert your tactical messages around that. And I think anyone can do that. You don't need to be a big global brand to think about consistent audio elements that you can use over time. And they can work very effectively for small brands as well as they can big brands.
I think quite a big part of our listeners will be from media agencies. Now, what's in it for the media agencies with audio branding? What's like their benefit from suggesting their client to think about these things? Why should they do that?
Well, so media agencies, you know, their job is to help their clients get the best effects from their advertising budget. And all of the research that we've seen demonstrates that brands that have strong audio branding and they use it consistently over time and across campaigns can get a bigger bang for their buck. So if you've got a strong audio branding, you use it in that way, help your clients develop it, use it on radio, use it on TV, cinema, anywhere where you've got an audio platform, then you'll see better results coming out the other side. It may not happen overnight, but over time, as that branding embeds itself in the consciousness of the nation and takes on a meaning distinct to that brand, it will be an incredibly powerful tool in your media toolbox.
Speaking about media toolbox, my final question to you, Mark, what's the perfect media mix?
Well, of course, it's 100% radio. Okay, now I'm just joking there, because I mean, it does depend. And, you know, if I go back to my media planning days, back in the olden days, a lot of it before internet advertising wasn't really a thing, although it did become a thing in the latter part of my media agency career. But the ideal media mix depends on a lot of things: who you're targeting, what your campaign objectives are, you know, what type of brand is it, what sort of environment is going to be the best place for the message to be received in. There's a whole host of considerations. And so I don't think there's a formula that says it should be this. But I think based on all of that academic research, I think one thing that I'd always encourage people to think about is reach. How am I going to ensure that I reach as many people as I need to? Because that seems to me to be the thing that dictates most clearly what sort of effects your campaign will have. And so obviously I'd add that radio is a great way of delivering reach. It's good at reaching light viewers of TV and reaching people at different times of day, which may be important as well. So it has a role to play. And I'd hope that people would give radio a bit more consideration on that basis for any campaign they're thinking of.
If they are hesitating, you've got the numbers.
Yeah.
Radio Centre UK and obviously Radio Media here in Finland can help you with those numbers. Mark Barber, thank you very much for coming.
Thanks, Larry. Cheers.